Now you have a reason to crack a cold one before the game. This is Hockey Nation with Gord Stellick and Mark Osborne on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
This is it, Saturday afternoon. It's Hockey Nation here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and The Fan Radio Network. And, of course, the must-listen-to hockey presentation. We do it every 2 hours, go around the National Hockey League. Gord Stellick, Mark Osborne, counting down to tonight's action between the Toronto Maple Leafs, Philadelphia Flyers, but also talking about the 12 games going on in the NHL tonight and this afternoon and everything else that's hockey. Now that, Ozzy, you're all hooked up on the Internet, you got the password.
Everything's okay now, Gord. I was a little bit anxious, you could tell. And you weren't helping me whatsoever.
But
everything's fine. I've got my technical staff on it, and we're all sorted out.
It was like an indie pit crew here 1 minute ago, feverishly working. So Mark Osborne could be get on air. Beautiful picture of you in your 50th birthday party with your family. And now you've moved on to some hockey stuff. And we'll start with the Toronto Maple Leafs. Bounce back, you want to look from, a bounce down against the Carolina Hurricanes. It seemed like everyone was waiting at some point for the inevitable in this recent streak. They actually did have a clunker along the way to the New Jersey Devils when they were 10-1-1. That was the one loss, but certainly you got all that the other day.
Is this not happening across the entire National Hockey League that at some point you're going to have an off night? It happened to be in Carolina where we've seen the Maple Leafs over the course of time the last many years not having good games in Carolina. For whatever reason, Gord, against sub-500 teams this season in particular, they've not been very good, but I choose to look at the positives, okay? And I know that you want to look at that game and continue to talk about it, but no, let's focus on what occurs tonight because, yes, after tonight, what, 7 straight road games starting in Chicago tomorrow night? And never take the Philadelphia Flyers lightly because although they're near the bottom of the Eastern Conference, they've got a lot of firepower and that's a recipe for success for them.
Well, I thought there were some positives in the third period against Carolina. You saw the Leafs' offensive prowess and flair when it was 2-1. Then Cody Franson got that penalty. But you saw a glimmer of what they've been doing. But the other thing you have to be careful of is what we see the Calgary Flames. Actually, a lot of teams that have played Toronto, Vancouver, the LA Kings, have then gone on prolonged losing streaks. So you've got the Flyers tonight. You're in Chicago tomorrow. And one thing you want is not have a great winning streak all of a sudden followed by, a 5 or 6 game losing streak.
Well,
that's a bit of a challenge.
That's absolutely true. And will it occur? We're yet to see that happen. Happen actually, or is it a sign of things to come because of the way that they played? And finally, whether the analytical department or things have caught up to them that they were winning hockey games while being widely outshot, I think they know and they understand. There's been a lot of good things that we've seen thus far with this core group in the last 3 weeks to suggest that it's not going to happen again this season.
Exactly. How big is the analytical department? You refer to them. Let's pay tribute. How many?
Well, I don't know. I hear it every day.
I know, but who are they? Faceless people behind Kyle Dubas. Is that basically who it is? The analytical department shall remain. Yeah.
No, but you know what? When you talk about the analytical department, they were talking about the Calgary Flames a number of weeks ago, saying it's not going to add up for them. And lo and behold, I think they're proving them that that's in fact the case for Calgary, for instance.
Well, last year it wasn't just analytics, but some basic common sense for the Toronto Maple Leafs about getting grossly outshot for 2/3 of the season. And, you know, these are things we can talk about. I mean, I've seen improvement, first of all, on the offensive side this year compared to last season. And the other part is I know it's maybe one small step, but they have come down in the shots a little bit more. The goal differential is in the Leafs' favor, where last year they were a minus. So to me, I don't know if you find the same way. It's a different animal this year than when they were banking points at this point last year.
Well, it is, Gordon. I mean, they're getting four lines that are contributing in some way consistently, at least. And now with David Booth in the lineup, what Richard Ponick has been able to do. And, yes, even when you insert a Trevor Smith from the Toronto Marlies, I mean, he may not be able to play on any of the other National Hockey League clubs, but for Randy Carlyle, what he's able to do is he's responsible defensively. He's won a Calder Cup championship, but he can take faceoffs. He can do some of the little things that may not obviously show up on the score sheet, and yet that's what you need to do for a fourth-line guy. They have to provide energy for the Maple Leafs, but there have been surprises for sure with the Santarellis, the Daniel Winnicks, the Leo Komarovs. It's all been part and parcel of why the Leafs have been successful. And again, we've reiterated this time in and time out. Stefan Robidoux on the back end. Roman Polak have been very positive contributors on the back end, just to change a little bit of just the makeup of the D and how they approach the game. And, of course, you're hoping that your younger kids like Riley and Gardner continue to improve upon. And now the surprise for me, at least, is their shutdown pair with Cody Franson and Dion Phaneuf that have been very, very good all season long.
Gord Selig, Mark Osborne on Hockey Nation on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, and The Fan Radio Network. Eddie Olczyk joining us for his weekly visit, last one before Christmas. How you doing, Eddie-O?
Hello, boys. Nice to be with you. I'm doing well. Hope you guys are doing well.
Well, we are. And, boy, a lot of interesting ones. I mean, big road trip coming up for the Maple Leafs and a big road trip right now for the Philadelphia Flyers, first of eight games. But, Eddie-O, that was a really really strange one, and I think somewhat disconcerting yesterday. Steve Mason, who you would expect in goal tonight for the Flyers, not here, and just basically collapsed or something comparable in practice yesterday.
You know, these type of things, when they pop up in our game, it catches your breath for sure. I mean, it takes your breath away, and with everything that's gone on with the mumps and players dealing with blood clots and, you know, something like that, a spell of somebody fainting, you know, and it's kind of puts everything in perspective. But, you know, Mason's had a good year. The Flyers have been a disappointment. I don't think there's any doubt about that. And when you look at it for the Flyers on the back end, especially Gordon Oz, I think it's their lack of mobility all the way through on their back end, because they do have guys that can score, and I don't think that offense is an issue, will be an issue for the Flyers, because I think they have enough guys that can certainly put the puck in the back of the net, and I think it all starts with you know, with the lack of mobility on the back end for the Flyers.
Yeah, and when you talk about the lack of mobility, Eddie, the one guy that really jumps to mind for us here with Toronto is that trade that the Maple Leafs made with Philadelphia, James Van Riemsdyk, yeah, and his 30 goals last year. Luke Shen going the other way. And Luke Shen was at one point going to be your, maybe in your top four at least here, future captain, and now he's down to a 5-6 and sometimes a healthy scratch. I guess that's what we're talking about, his lack of mobility in his skating, which has always been a problem for Luke Shen.
Yeah, and that's, look, you know, all players, Oz, as we know, and Gordon, I mean, you did it at the highest level in management, is that, you know, you look at players, you know their strengths, you know their weaknesses, and it's up to the organization or the coach, most importantly, because he's the guy that pulls the trigger on how much ice time a player is going to have. But, you know, how do we use that player? And I'm a big believer, and I think I learned this when I was coaching in Pittsburgh, that, you know, let's figure out who our guys are, what their strengths are, what their weaknesses are before everybody else does. And, you know, you're gonna make some moves that are going to backfire, and certainly I think that they would want to do over in Philadelphia for sure on that trade. But figure out who your players are before everybody else does, and then go from there. But you're right. I mean, Shen is one of a couple of guys that aren't very quick on the back end, but he does bring something. He does bring some experience. He does, I think he blocks shots extremely well. I mean, he's a guy that can kill some minutes as a 5-6-7 defenseman. But like I said, the Flyers, the hole for them certainly is on the back end, because they got some guys that can really get up and go up front. And if those defensemen can move and make plays tape to tape instead of the forwards tracking it down off the glass or, you know, retrieving shoot-ins, it makes it a little bit more challenging for the forwards. But you got to know the strengths of the players and put them in those positions if they're going to be in the lineup where they're going to give you, you know, the optimum effort and the best opportunity to get 2 points each and every night.
Now, Eddie-O, a couple of teams that look like they were on the way to very dismal seasons, which could make it a long, long season. The Buffalo Sabres, Florida Panthers, both have got back on track and been kind of surprises of late. What have you seen in both teams?
Yeah, I've seen very little of Florida, Gord, full disclosure, very little of the Panthers. I did watch a good portion of their game against the Red Wings. I think it was earlier this week. I think they beat the Red Wings 2-1, 3-2, whatever. I don't remember the score, but one thing I was impressed with I mean, they do have some big guys that can get up and down the ice. Bukestad in particular, they did look like they were a pretty good skating team. So So, you know, other than that, I haven't seen a lot of the Florida Panthers. The Buffalo Sabres, I think it's us against the world mentality. I think Teddy Nolan has pushed a lot of the right buttons. They've been getting outstanding goaltending from Enroth without question. If you don't have it, and we all know that goaltending camouflages a lot of issues and a lot of deficiencies, they've been able to win low-scoring games. They've been able to score some goals, and they're getting contributions from, you know, a handful of guys. So I think it speaks to the depth of the team right now, and they're playing with some confidence. And I think it is us against the world mentality, because everybody had them pegged for the, you know, the Eichel, McDavid, Eichel sweepstakes. And the Sabres here have put some space in between them and a couple of other teams that are sitting right near the bottom of the National Hockey League. But as you guys know, it's a long year, and everybody goes through those cycles, and right now it's a real positive one for the Buffalo Sabres.
Eddie, the Maple Leafs will be facing the Blackhawks tomorrow night, and that's the team that you follow the most. You guys are in Columbus playing the Blue Jackets tonight, and no surprise in some respects that the Blackhawks sit atop the Central Division. One question that I did have for you in looking at the Blackhawks over the years, and I got to tell you, I'm a little bit surprised as I look at their lineup, and there's no question they're top heavy. They won a couple of Stanley Cups. Looking back in time, though, they never were, it appeared to be, a very good penalty-killing team and not necessarily a great defensive team, and yet they're number two in the National Hockey League in team defense, and they sit number one with penalty-killing at 90%. Why the turnaround all of a sudden?
Goaltending, I really believe that. Going back, and something that I had talked about on our local show a couple of games ago, if you look at 30 games into the regular season, my opinion, they've only given up, the goaltenders have only given up three soft goals or bad goals, however you want to define it, in 30-some games. That's pretty incredible stuff. So it speaks to the team defense. The penalty killer has to be the guy in goal, your best guy. But it's gone hand in hand because the goaltending has been sensational, and they've been able to play with the puck a lot. But, you know, early in the year, they weren't scoring goals, and they were defending a lot, and the goaltending kept them in a lot of games. And now that they're scoring, they've gained some traction and have a lot of confidence. And but I would say, Ozzie, it starts with the three different goaltenders they use. Corey Crawford is back tonight. It'll be interesting to see what Joel Quenneville does tomorrow night with it back-to-back. Corey Crawford's been out for the last couple of weeks with an ankle injury. It'll be interesting to see, how he performs tonight, and would Joel Quenneville give Crawford an opportunity to go back-to-back after being off for a long period of time. So that question I don't think will be answered until post-game tonight.
Eddie O, the coaching change made in Ottawa, and nowadays you generally bring somebody new in. Dave Cameron's a guy, has a history with Eugene Melnyk in junior hockey. 3-1-1 in five games. I was really impressed. I thought they showed some jam last night as well, because they got a break playing Ilya Burzgalov's first start in, like 6-8 years for the Anaheim Ducks. But have you noticed that? I mean, do you think this is one of those typical short-term things you get for five or six games, or have you noticed a difference in the sense play?
You know what? I would compare it to the Edmonton situation, and watching Edmonton a little closer than Ottawa, but just seeing them play, it seems like there's a little bit more of a purpose. There seems like a little bit more of a confidence. There seems to be a little bit more, I don't want to say togetherness, because I don't think that's fair. I don't think any of us can sit here and say that, you know, a team is playing more together if you're on the outside looking in. But I think you guys know where I'm getting at. I just think that there's a greater sense of urgency, and maybe the pressure has been thrown at the skates of the players now with what's gone on in Ottawa and in Edmonton. And I look at the goaltending has been really, really good for sure. And that's allowed the Ottawa Senators here to turn it around to this point, but you got to get some traction. And if it is about a different message coming, and the goaltenders are a little sharper, and the guys are feeling a little bit bigger and better about themselves, you're going to find a way to win some hockey games.
Eddie, I'm going to go a little bit off the board here, instead of talking about the National Hockey League, just out of curiosity, World Juniors, for somebody like yourself there in Chicago, I know Jack Eichel is, being compared to Connor McDavid, 1-2 in the National Hockey League draft. So as, you were a guy that played for the USA in the Olympics and came up, obviously playing in the United States. Your thoughts, is do people get, are they aware of it in the United States, you know, certainly at that particular level?
Well, I think that most hockey people are. I wouldn't sit here and say that, you know, there's a fan base for the World Juniors. I think any time that the players have a relationship, whether it is in college or in the United States Hockey League or American kids going up and playing in, you know, playing in Canadian Major Junior, I think that's where the tie-in is. And I think as the tournament starts and the tournament goes on, because all the games are on the NHL Network down here in the States, and I think it does get some momentum, and I think it's getting more popular, but it's not something that people are talking about right now. But I think once Christmas hits, certainly people, hockey people, and a lot of people will jump on board and turn on the TV and be able to relate to some of these kids that maybe come from their local state or played at their local college or what have you. But it's gotten better, Oz. I think to the heart of your question and the heart of my answer is I think it's gotten much more popular because of the exposure that the games have gotten on the NHL Network. And look, and obviously the success that Team USA's had at the World Juniors over the course of, 10, 12 years. I mean, whatever the number is, I mean, it's a lot better than it used to be. And I think what's happened, too, is that I think USA Hockey, and I still think that there is a little bit, how do I phrase this? I still think that when there are American-born players that turn their cheek to Ann Arbor, the National Development Program, or leave the U.S. and go to Canada and play in the Ontario League or play in the Western League, I think that there's still a little bit of resentment that comes from the powers that be at USA Hockey. It's getting better. Hey, I don't care. Everybody's situation is different. College is not for everybody. The Western League is not for everybody. If the kid's a good enough player, he should be there. That should not hang over a young man's head if he makes a decision to turn down Ann Arbor for the National Development Program or he decides to go to Canada. And I think it's gotten better, but until it's completely wiped, in my opinion, there's still going to be those kids that kind of fall through the cracks that maybe should be there or get an opportunity to be at one of the tryout camps to try to be one of the top American-born junior players to play in that world-class tournament.
Yeah, one of the rumors is Eichel will leave BU and come up to play for the Quebec Ramparts after the tournament. Who knows if he does or doesn't, but we know guys like Pat LaFontaine and Jeremy Roenick and others did that, you know, back more in your era. And the other one I'm thinking is last night Canada plays Russia in an exhibition game, and they make some cuts right after the game. Guys like Michael Delcole and that. And I'm wondering, sure, Eddie O and Ozzy, just like I'm thinking, okay, you have the camp in the summer, right? You got all these evaluation camps. Do you really need to be cutting guys now? Shouldn't you just commit to a core of guys, bring them in, and try to meld them at the as a team? I just think a lot of these guys are chronically afraid of being cut, and you can't really mold a team that way. What do you think?
I agree with you 1,000%. I think, and again, I don't know how many young men were there to be able to cut down from, but I mean, you'd like to think that Hockey Canada and Team USA know exactly, you know, where they're going, barring any injuries. But also, too, is, you know, the evaluation process of how a guy plays in between, you know, October and December. And maybe a guy's on the upswing, and maybe another guy is not playing really well that might be a bubble guy. But I think at some point, I think in fairness to the individual, most importantly, this isn't about, the team. This is about the player first and then to the team, because ultimately, until you're on that team, you're still being evaluated. But for me, if you could eliminate as many of those distractions or eliminate as many players as you can to get there for the, you know, the tryout or the, the preseason right before the World Juniors, I think it'd be better for everybody. And look, you're going to have your alternates. You're going to have your guys that are going to get banged up, and, you know, a drop of a hat and a phone call, and a guy's going to be able to be there right away.
Well, I know the NHL is a little bit different than the World Juniors, Gordon, but I'm so glad that we took Patrice Bergeron in Vancouver and then Jamie Benn last year in Sochi. Had we gone to the evaluation camp in the summertime, those two guys would not have been there and wouldn't have been gold medals for us. So,
You figured that simple.
Thoughts on those two guys in particular.
This is good. This is the night of Ozzy's Christmas fables, Eddie O. If you want to just keep a pipeline going while you're doing the Columbus-Chicago game, maybe you can listen to them all.
I've seen that pitch before.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Well, I'll tell you what, let's get to work. We'll wish you a very Merry Christmas, you and Diane, everybody in the family, and appreciate your weekly contributions, and we'll look forward to catching up next week.
Sounds good, boys. Same to you guys. All the best. Thanks.
Eddie Olczyk joining us on Hockey Nation. So, well, wait a sec. I'm just
throwing that out there.
No. I don't have a problem
but
with
you
what
know
you
what? Here's the thing. Yeah, in theory, I think it probably is a good idea to maybe come back into the summertime and say, okay, here are my guys. But you got to admit, Gord, there are very good players not playing on some poor hockey clubs, and they don't have guys around them. So let's see how these guys actually play when they're playing with better players in the same – and you're kind of waving your head at me.
Well, I'm just saying that's what the evaluation camp in the summer is about. I'm saying let them play. Then, you know.
Well, what if a guy jumps out at you at the start of the season
ago,
here
no,
and he plays
then,
for
then
three
pick
months?
Them. Then pick them a couple of weeks ago. But once they come to this camp now, don't cut any more guys. Like, once they're here this last couple of days, don't – like, it's another set of tryouts again for some of these guys.
Well, you know what? Then you would be – maybe looking at a few guys that all of a sudden, wow, look at how great he has played the first 3 months of the season. Why is he not part of the World Junior program?
No, but he would be. He would
but
be.
It would be because you just brought him and made an arbitrary decision by, again, cutting a few guys that were from your summer evaluation camp instead.
Exactly. Okay, exactly. Well. You get your team together. Keep a couple extras because I don't want to diss the Jamie Benns and Patrice Bergerons.
Oh, boy. I'm going to have to take a hot bath tonight and think about this one and think, man,
well,
how do I respond to this?
I don't think people really need the visual. I mean, I think they think you're thinking all the time, which is nice. Patrice Bergeron played about 2 minutes a game, okay, as the number 13th guy because Doug McClain kept complaining. He was the Patrice Bergeron of the
Oh, really?
Olympic
like
coverage.
Sidney Crosby did not like him, right? He thought that he had –
I'm talking about in Vancouver. So yeah, you're talking the last time.
In Vancouver. No, in Vancouver.
He was our 13th forward.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yes. Yes, right. He was.
Well, let me go back on that one again because you sometimes just bring up information just out of nowhere and then all of a sudden expect me to respond to just saying that he's the 13th forward and didn't have a positive
correct.
Impact. What
correct.
About Jerome Iginla before that in the 2002 Olympics? He was even pegged to play. He played on that team and was one of the better players in Salt Lake City, by the way.
What about the 1964 Olympics?
Okay.
Okay, we will come back. We're going to get back focus on the Leafs, Philadelphia Flyers. Could talk about Jake Gardner, possibly a healthy scratch tonight, what they're going to do with Roman Polak and back in the lineup, who gets the scratch, and a few other things. When we return, you're listening to Leafs Nation. Pregame coming up right after Hockey Nation. Gord Stellick, Mark Osborne with you. Joining us, John Bartlett will join us in a few minutes' time. Play-by-play voice of the Montreal Alouettes. Later on, Butch Goring, Scott Oak from Hockey Night in Canada, and Montreal Canadiens, by the way, yes. And you're staring me down. Ron Hextall, the general manager of the Philadelphia Flyers, will join us in our press box up here. That's all coming up. More Hockey Nation with Gord Stellick, Mark Osborne on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
As an unlicensed doctor, we suggest a prescription for one of our shows. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Fake doctor's orders. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Demand. Sportsnet 590. The Fan.
Welcome back. Here we are at Air Canada Center. Get set for tonight's game between the Toronto Maple Leafs, Philadelphia Flyers. We welcome you back to Hockey Nation with Gord Stellick, Mark Osborne on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. John Bartlett will join us in a few minutes' time to preview the Montreal-Ottawa game. Then we'll hear from Butch Goring as Tampa Bay Lightning take on the New York Islanders. Yeah, just went to break, talk about this could be one of the storylines, obviously, Aussies, about who sits out, and it seems like Jake Gardner will be the odd man out, at least going by this morning skate.
Well, you know what, Corbinian Holzer, who was the odd man out the other night with Roman Polak drawing back in after injury. Jake Gardner was the one who, you know, stayed out quite a long time this morning. Holzer went off early. I mean, that's if that's any indication, we would assume that Jake Gardner is your healthy scratch, and I don't think it would surprise a lot of people other than here we go again with Jake's inconsistencies.
Well, Polak played 19 minutes the other night. Thought he played well, you know, and I also like that they didn't just bring him back for a few minutes. I mean, he was ready to play, and obviously Randy had the confidence to stick him right back in there. I would hope as well that, first of all, if everyone stays healthy, that's a very positive situation. The other part up front, Leo Komarov, back skating today. Who knows what? At least that's, I guess he skated yesterday as well, so that's a positive sign. And the other one is Carter Ashton's playing with the Toronto Marlies right now.
Yeah, you know what? And while we were downstairs and I was watching you have your media meal, we were able to watch the first period of the Marlies game.
Well, you could have a media meal too. Well, you don't want to watch people
eating. No, but I was watching the Marlies, and Carter Ashton had a number of real good quality scoring chances in that first period. And you know what? I believe the American League has passed Carter Ashton by. I mean, last year, I think he had 16 goals in like 24 games. So, yeah, he's got to find his legs, obviously, here at the National Hockey League level. But before we do get John Bartlett on, I did want to get back to you on what you said about the World Juniors, and you're just like, why should they have a camp, and why are they cutting kids?
No.
And you're thinking, like, my goodness, are you saying that these guys are going to be, like, tarnished for life if they get cut,
goodness sakes? I agree with having a camp.
Right.
I'm saying whenever they pick, like, then 2 weeks from now, 2 weeks ago, whatever it is, pick a team.
Well, when did you want
pick
to
pick a couple
camp?
Extras for injuries that are on the team, and then just stick with them.
You got to name stick your – you have to go down to 22-man roster, do you not?
Whatever, maybe. I'm just saying, I don't know why Michael Delco, for example, has to go through another round of trying to prove himself while 30 guys are looking at him.
It's great experience for the kid.
Everyone's afraid to make a mistake or not. Instead of trying to bond and form a team and focus on team play in these games, like, you've earned it, you've made it, that's what it is.
Oh, I don't agree with you, and it kind of reminds me of my daughter when she was going to public school, and we used to do races in track and field, and say, oh no, let's not time them, let's not give them, you know, first, second, or third, let's everybody have fun here, there's no purpose behind it. It's like, are you kidding me? Like, we're catering and we're coddling these young kids today. Let's just bring them here, work your butt off, and if you get cut, so be it. Work a little bit harder next time.
Were you watching like an Oprah or Dr. Phil marathon today or something like that? I mean, what is it? The whole thing about coddling kids and all.
No, but you brought it up and saying, you know, why are we doing this now? Like, why do we have to bring so many guys to camp and then cut them? Like, what are you worried about?
I'm saying, why aren't they worried about focusing on a team right now? Number one, just focus on team values. They pick the best players, then focus on these exhibition
games. You're bringing this
figuring
up.
Out what lines and all that go and what have you.
But you're bringing this up because now they do not have they have not had success for the last many years, right? That's why you're.
Well,
that's
part of it. Part of it.
Okay.
Sorry, do we have Butch on the line now? Or we're going to get Butch.
No.
Okay, we got Butch. Okay, we're talking about some of the things that are going on, and this is good. A welcome respite as Butch Goering joins us on many occasions. The New York Islanders back on track as well. They'll take on the Tampa Bay Lightning tonight. Butch, first of all, thanks for joining us. And we're just saying about a lot of teams, boy, like Calgary, Vancouver, they've got on that slippery slope where they're losing. It's tough to get it going back. And the Islanders had two games where they blew three-goal leads and lost the game. But what's been the key in getting back to their winning ways?
Yeah, they really have. And I think you can attribute to the maturity of the hockey team and also the depth. I mean, the goaltending has been solid for the most part of the season. And even though they've gone through some injuries like the rest of the teams in the National Hockey League, they've been able to get by using their sixth, seventh, eighth defensemen, and they've still been able to come in and do a job. So this is a team that, for me, plays with an awful lot of confidence. They really believe in themselves, and I think they've found their way in the National Hockey League more than anything else. And because they have enough talent and enough depth, they're able to maintain.
Butchie, what's been the biggest addition for you? Because I know in the off season you guys brought in Yaroslav Halak, being Kulaman Grabowski, a couple of former Maple Leafs, but then right before the season began, Nick Leddy and Johnny Boychuk on the back end. So quite a few changes to the Islanders, and you know, for all intents and purposes, looks like this team is for real and could be knocking on the Eastern Conference door.
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously some big changes over the summer, and you have to credit Gus Snow with going out and really, I guess, fixing the holes in the dike, if you will. The addition of the goaltender, that was his number one priority, went out and convinced Halak to become a New York Islander, and then, of course, bringing in both Kulaman and Grabowski, who have played very consistent for the Islanders. But the big deal for me was really late in the season, when they were late in the summer, really, grabbing Leddy and Boychuk. I mean, these are top four defensemen, and all of a sudden the Islanders had six guys that could all play and all play big minutes, and a couple of guys that know all about winning, and that's an important part of of the mixture, as you guys know, and just the maturity that they bring into the dressing room. Both Letty, even though he's a young guy, he's been around some awful good hockey players, and of course Boychuk with his character, and they fit in. And I think people underestimate the value on just how important his guys can fit in, you know, with the new teammates. And this has been seamless here. I mean, it's like these guys have been Islanders for their entire career, because there's just nothing gone in the wrong direction when you talk about team chemistry. So adding all those things together, and again with the talent that this team now has, it's little wonder that, you know, they've been able to maintain.
I wonder one thing in last night's game, because, you know, here we had Alexander Ovechkin give the hit on Leo Komarov. It looked innocent, but Komarov's been out ever since, and there was no supplementary discipline on that hit. Last night, PJ Stock thought that Pavel Datsyuk really targeted John Tavares' head. Any thoughts about that?
I remember the head, and I you caught John Tavares by surprise. So John was turning into him and didn't, you know, really never saw him coming. I don't, you know, myself personally, I think Tavares would tell you the same thing, that he has great admiration for Datsyuk, and I think it would be hard for him to accept the fact that Datsyuk was kind of like a cheap shot on him. So it didn't seem to be that way. I think the blunt, obviously the force did catch Tavares in the head, but I think it was more because Tavares just didn't see him, didn't expect him, and took a pretty good knock.
Butchie, is it ironic? Is it bittersweet? You were part of the Islander Stanley Cup teams in the early 80s, and now this Islander team is making some noise in the Eastern Conference, and yet at the end of the season we'll be moving to Brooklyn next year. What are the thoughts or the comments of the people that follow the Islanders? And obviously it looks like they're getting people back into the building there in Long Island, but with the pending move next year, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think the theme has been right from the get-go is that nobody is concerning themselves about next year. I think everybody has wanted to make sure that this particular season is as memorable as any season that has ever had at the Nassau Coliseum. I mean, right from the opening game, this is a crowd that's been very, very active. They've been very enthusiastic. I mean, they have pulled for their guys game in and game out, and the players have reacted. And you know, you can ask them to a man. I mean, it's been so much fun for them to listen to the response of the fans. I mean, this is, as we all know, can be a very, very loud building, particularly in the playoffs. But this has had a playoff-type atmosphere almost in each and every game. So it's been a little easier for the guys to get up for hockey games. And if they falter a little bit, the fans have been there to pick them up. So it's been pretty interesting up to this point in time as to the reaction of the fans. Nobody seems to be looking at it as a negative. Everybody's just really of the mindset, hey, this is the last year, and we're going to have fun, we're going to enjoy it, and we're going to hang around here as long as we can.
For a few years, you had the marquee matchup when Washington-Pittsburgh played Ovechkin and Crosby. How has it evolved, Stamkos and Tavares?
It's been pretty good. As you know, they're friends. So, you know, anytime you get friends battling one another, the competition heats up. So they're always trying to, I will say they're trying to outdo one another, because they're very, very conscientious about the outcome of the game from a team perspective. But, you know, for me to watch these elite hockey players go at one another, and you know, they're always at their best, whether they're, you know, each and every shift, I mean, they just go at it. So, it's great. I mean, I've been able to, you know, we watched Chicago the other night with Jonathan Toews and taking on John Tavares, and of course just with Datsyuk and Tavares. So it's fun to watch the game, and then it's fun in the aftermath to be able to talk to Tavares and kind of like, you know, so how did that one go? Where did you see that happening? And of course, you know, it's some games it's like, oh, well, I think I got the best of him, and then the other side of it, well, I think he might have got the best of me. So interesting confrontations, but great hockey.
But you know that Johnny Tavares, speaking of him, still leads your team in scoring. But any lingering effects from what you've been able to observe and see in him, from him getting hurt last season and now coming back and being healthy? Is there a difference to his game, or is he basically the same as he was last season?
No, I don't think there's anything wrong with his game at all. I mean, you know, from a physical standpoint, I think that John Tavares has set such high expectations for himself that, you know, and people just assume that he's going to dominate game after game or shift after shift. And as we all know, that's an impossible task. So I think this team has benefited from the fact that it's had so much depth that, you know, that team is still winning games, and even if John Tavares isn't putting up the same number of points that he put up, you know, in the past. So I think that's taken a little bit of pressure off John, which I think is a good thing. But this is a guy that, you know, when the game's on the line, he wants to be a factor out there, and he raises his level. So his leadership qualities continue to grow. And I don't think anybody has any worries about John Tavares. Certainly I don't. To me, he's still playing the same game. It's just tough when you're a Mark guy each and every game.
Well, that marquee matchup once again tonight, Tavares against Stamkos. Butch, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you, guys. Anytime.
Butch Goring, the color analyst for the New York Islander broadcast crew. They're taking on the Tampa Bay Lightning. Meanwhile, Ottawa, Montreal, a battle of two Canadian titans as well as we count down to the Philadelphia-Toronto game there. Our friend John Bartlett, of course, the play-by-play voice for the Montreal Canadiens, joining us. How you doing, John?
Very well, gentlemen, and all the best of the season to you.
Well, likewise, and everyone, of course, here happy about your gig for the last couple of years with the Montreal Canadiens, and by and large happy with the play of the Canadiens. Last couple of games they've lost, slipped a little bit of late. What do you attribute it to?
Well, I think just sort of getting out of their rhythm there a little bit, what they had going at the start of the year, and sometimes confidence, you know, can be a bit of a fleeting thing, and it can be a bit of a momentum thing, and maybe they lost a bit of that momentum. But, you know, when you look at the last couple games, I mean, the Anaheim game was a close one for them, and they kind of held in there. But the story all season long has really been trying to overcome bad starts. So that's been the biggest thing they have to focus in on when they want to try and get their game back, to make sure they get off to a good start. But, you know, even the fact that they lost to Anaheim, this homestand has been a good one here so far, where they've produced a lot of offense. So I think that's sort of been the key for them right now. And the move of Alex Galchenyuk going to center has seemed to help him flourish in his new role. So, you know, I think with a couple different looks and a little bit of home cooking right now, it seems to have the Canadiens a little bit more back on track to the way they were at the start of the year.
Johnny, a little bit of curiosity on my part with P.K. Subban, big contract in the offseason. He's wearing an A. Where would you rate his game or where it's at? Has he been steady, below average, just right where you expected him? Comments on P.K. Subban.
Well, I think he's been pretty good so far. I still think he hasn't been as good as he can be. I think there's more room for him to definitely be better. And he'll probably tell you that as well. And you know, the thing about P.K. Subban is he always raises the bar on himself. So I think as he does that, you expect a little more from him as well. So I wouldn't say he's had a bad year by any stretch. I think he's been pretty good, as a matter of fact. But I just think that there's even more there for him. And probably part of it is pressure he's put on himself now that he wears the A. And you know, without a captain here, they're all sort of sharing that leadership responsibility. And I think he wants to take that to heart and you know, play a bigger role. And so sometimes when you want to do something like that, you end up putting a little extra undue pressure on yourself. And that might be the case for PK, where he's got to relax a little bit and just play his game and go back to doing what he does best.
That argument at times about a goaltender, should they be eligible for the Hart Trophy or not, but it's sort of few and far between. Their name comes up. Carey Price's name has come up. What kind of case would you make for him for a Hart Trophy?
Well, certainly there's been nights where he's held the team in, especially when they've got off to a sluggish start, and he's kept them in early on in the game. And you know, this team, I think, is a different club if they don't have Carey Price. So to make that kind of a case for him, I certainly think when you look at what the definition would be most valuable to their team, that certainly is the case, no matter how good Max Pacioretty has been or P.K. Subban or anybody else. When you look at all the wins for the Canadiens, it's come down to Carey Price and some solid goaltending that he's provided for them, and steady. It's just, you know, I think with Price, you just have such confidence. It's a consistent game you get from him, and you never sort of worry about it. So, and that's probably what he's improved the most in the last couple of years. It's just that steady consistency. And, you know, for Price, he certainly has been their MVP and has stolen a couple of those points on his own for the team. So I think there would be a solid case for that, albeit it's early in the season still. But definitely you could make a strong case that the Canadiens aren't where they are in the standings and don't get the points they have right now if it's not for him.
Johnny, I want to get your thoughts on from the other night. A few nights ago, the Montreal Canadiens honored their captain, who was captain there for many years, Saku Koivu. I think he played 13 years in Montreal. His old team, the Ducks, visited the Bell Center there. What was maybe just describe a little bit of the reaction, because I looked at Saku Koivu as, yeah, a consistent player, a good player. but certainly not in the bracket of the so-called Montreal greats that wore the C.
Well, you're right, and that's probably why there was a nice evening to honor him for who he was as a captain, who he was as a player, and everything he did in the community off the ice as well, to have that kind of a night for him. And I think that was sort of the way to acknowledge it, but you're not going to see number 11 go to the rafters. So that's probably where the difference is with Saku Koivu. But, you know, Koivu, I think with his time here, he was with Montreal, don't forget, and with some pretty bad teams in a very bad era. His rookie season was the year that, you know, he came in, saw his coach get fired. Mario Tremblay comes in, goes on a roll, and then next thing you know, things go awry with Patrick Roy. He gets traded, they close the Forum and open the Molson Center, which is now the Bell Center. And so quite the rookie year for him to go through. But, you know, I think when you look through those years, that the team that he had definitely wasn't the best around him, but he always was, you know, a pretty consistent good player. And then, of course, everything that happened with him personally is where the connection with the city really gets strong. You know, the emotional night when he returned, coming back from fighting off cancer, was something that he addressed in the speech and got emotional about, and it's still one of the most special nights that's ever happened in this building in Montreal. So, and what he did in the community with helping the hospital and the kids, and you know, raising the $8 or $9 million they needed to get a PET scanner here at the Montreal General, and now they have one, and a foundation that still bears his name and still raises funds to help the hospital and the cancer wing and the kids here, and all the work he did. So I think that's probably where the heartstrings are probably tugged on most here in Montreal when it comes to Saku Koivu and the fan bases. Not just the player he was on the ice. Fans appreciate that, you know, he was a good player, gave it all on the ice in a very bad time for the team. But what he did off the ice is really what, you know, extends his legacy here in Montreal.
Well, look forward to that. The game is on City TV tonight. The Montreal Canadiens take on the Ottawa Senators. John, we don't talk to you before. Very Merry Christmas. Holiday greetings to you and your family, okay?
Yeah, thanks very much. Same to you guys. Merry Christmas, everyone. Toronto, all the best in the new year. Be safe and don't drink and drive.
There we go. A little public service message there. Very responsible, John Bartlett, the voice of the Montreal Canadiens.
One thing I don't do, Gordon, you know,
is what? Listen to John Bartlett? Or?
No, I certainly don't drink and drive.
We will echo that sentiment. That is accurate. There he goes, a little dial tone. Just to give you that flavor.
But you know what? Interesting enough, right? I mean, all the things that he did say about Saku Koivu, I was just kind of interested, having seen that on TV. I go, wow, you know, they're honoring Saku Koivu. But certainly I think it was the sentimental decision, right? Because of his length of service there, but the cancer part of it and what he's done in the community.
Absolutely.
Certainly not necessarily the wow factor as an unbelievable Montreal Canadian, but more about his character and leadership, which I think he finally displayed.
Well, interesting mirroring that with Daniel Alfredsson. Same type of thing, a guy playing or finishing with another team, coming back to be honored by really his sort of the franchise you associate him with, and get that kind of farewell, and as much for their character off the ice as on the ice. Scott Oak's going to join us next hour. We'll talk to him about that. He interviews all those guys along the way about whether it's Alfredsson or Saku Koivu. Also, look at two teams, Vancouver, Calgary. You would have said 2 weeks ago this would be a battle of two Western Conference titans. Right now, they're two teams that have been struggling ever since the Toronto Maple Leafs defeat them. That was a start of losing streaks, or a part of losing streaks for both those guys. And also, Ron Hextall, the general manager of the Philadelphia Flyers, will drop by. We're counting down to that game, the puck drop between the Leafs and the Philadelphia Flyers. You're listening to Hockey Nation with Gord Selick, Mark Osborne on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
This ain't like when you're at a game and sign up for a credit card just to get the prize and then you immediately cancel the credit card. Because there's no prize when you sign up for our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590, The Fan on demand. Want to talk a little hockey? Why are we asking? Of course you do. This is Hockey Nation with Gord Stellick and Mark Osborne on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Welcome back to Hockey Nation. Gord Stellick, Mark Osborne on Sportsnet 590, The Fan and The Fan Radio Network. Getting set, counting down the Toronto Maple Leafs battling the Philadelphia Flyers tonight at Air Canada Center. Ron Hextall, their general manager, will join us in a few minutes' time, but we're also taking a look around the National Hockey League. 12 games in all that are going on. We'll have Scott Oak joining us in a second for a talk about the Vancouver-Calgary game, and we'll look around everything else that's going on in the NHL. Of course, Telic Mark Osborne now joined by Scott Oak. He'll be busy tonight with Vancouver-Calgary on CBC, the late game tonight. And, okay, this is these are two teams that a couple weeks ago you would have thought of two Western Conference juggernauts, but now you've got two teams that have been struggling a bit of late.
Yeah, well, what's happened to the Canucks with their five straight losses, Gordon, Mark, is that they have a perilous hold on a playoff spot now, and the Calgary Flames with seven straight losses are out of the postseason. Life in the West is difficult enough that if you fall out of the top eight, you can spend the rest of the season trying to get back in. So it's going to be a challenge for the Calgary Flames. They, I guess, more than anything now, are tasked with trying to prove that what they did at the start of the season when they were, well, I think, something like 17-8-2 was not a mirage. But anyway, whatever happens tonight, we know that in the new NHL, there will be a winner, and that's good news for one team.
Scotty, Mark Giordano just continues to, I think, impress along the way. Leads all NHL defensemen with 32 points, scored his ninth goal the other night. And you would have to say at this point of the season, maybe the lead runner for the Norris Trophy. Would you agree?
Might lose a few votes based on the fact the Flames are sliding now. But I think that's a fair point, that Mark, even now, if the vote was to be held today, he probably would win it. And he and TJ Brody probably provide, make for the best defensive pair in the NHL. Certainly were every bit of that when the Flames were off to such a great start. They're still producing from the back end, and that's been one of their strong points. No points by defensemen for the Calgary Flames. So, I think it's fair to say that for a large part of his career, Mark Giordano was a well-kept secret in Calgary, but word's getting out now, and teams are no longer surprised by what he provides.
Take a look. You mentioned about Giordano. We talked about the Calgary Flames. What about the Canucks, Scott? Are they talking about as far as, because they had a charmed existence, Jim Benning, Willie Desjardins. What's gone off the rails a bit the last 2 weeks, except for me, besides meeting the big bad Leafs?
It's hard to say. I mean, that road trip of theirs started off spectacularly. They were 3-0 to start and then ended up finishing at 3-3-1. So they came home to start their homestand in a three-game losing streak. And, man, they just got pasted by the Rangers the other night because of how they tried to make up for getting scored on quickly. They started pressing, and with every mistake, there were more odd man rushes for the Rangers. So that was a disastrous game. They were better against the Dallas Stars, but not good enough to win on Wednesday. So their streak is at 5 now, but there's a lot of talent on this team. I think Ryan Miller, despite the fact that people are continuing to analyze his save percentage, is probably, and he would agree, it's not good enough. He's got a lot of wins, 16 on the season, bids for number 17 tonight. I like the Canucks' chances to make the playoffs this season.
Scotty, any difference that you've noticed, and I don't know how often you do, in fact, cover the Vancouver Canucks, but Willie Desjardins is an interesting guy for me. Great success at the major junior level last year with the Texas Stars. They won the Calder Trophy, and then the immediate success with the Vancouver Canucks. So now, these last couple of weeks, his demeanor changed a little bit, his approach to the game or how he's handling, say, morning skates. We often notice with Randy Carlyle the way that he presents himself when the team is not doing well. Just interested as to Desjardins and his approach to the game.
Well, the number of times I've been around the Canucks, and last week they had lost 3 in a row. This week for our Hockey Night in Canada game, they're up to 5 losses in a row. I can't really say that I've seen any changes in Willie Desjardins' demeanor. I think that's a good thing. He is probably the perfect antidote to John Tortorella of last year. One thing I've noticed being around the Canucks, limited as I say, but I have been around them enough to notice that there's an atmosphere of fun around the team that never existed last year, whether it's at the end of practice when they're fooling around in shootouts or whatever it happens to be. They just look like there's a load off their minds. They're a lot more relaxed, and I think that's got a lot to do with what Willie Desjardins has brought to the team. It's been a great addition, and I don't expect, with the way it's going, that, any changes in his demeanor. I think that's part of his personality, and that's why he was a success at the American League. That's why he probably could have had the Pittsburgh job if he wanted it, but he ended up choosing Vancouver, and the Canucks are better for it.
Scott, I didn't get a chance to talk to you on air, but wanted to mention about I sent you a note about John Béliveau, the funeral, and I thought a lot of fabulous, compelling parts to the coverage, including your ability to get to all the big names there and really pay tribute. I thought that was a huge part of the coverage that I enjoyed, and a lot of people did as well. And we're just talking
about... Well, Gordon, that is very nice of you to say. I wish I could say it was a brilliant bit of journalism by me, but honestly, it wasn't hard to get people to talk about John Béliveau, you know, on that day. It was a very emotional day, as you'd expect, and you know, people were quite willing to share their memories of him and to tell you what he meant to Canada. And you know, I don't want to diminish my own efforts here, but frankly, Gord, you could have done that.
Well, okay.
I don't know about that, Scott.
Okay, well, I could have done it, but Ozzy couldn't have done it. Let's put it that way. Let's leave it at that. I get. Okay. But anyway, it was something truly special to, as you say, pay tribute that way. Ozzy brought up about Saku Koivu earlier when we were chatting with John Bartlett. You talked to a lot of guys in the last month. We've seen, you know, guys being honored for as much as what they were off the ice as on the ice. And maybe talk about your experiences with Saku Koivu and Daniel Alfredsson, two Canadian guys I imagine you interviewed quite often.
Yeah, well, I always thought one thing about Daniel Alfredsson, that he was brutally honest. He was incapable of, I hate to use the word lie, but, you know, to dress up the facts or twist them or whatever. He just always told you what was on his mind. And it sometimes, you know, didn't do him any favors. For example, when Ottawa was playing Pittsburgh a couple of years ago and they're down, what was it, 3-0 or 3-1, and they said, can you come back? And he said, not likely. But it was the blind, honest truth. When he had his contractual problems with Ottawa when he left, you know, he didn't dress it up. He just point-blank said when he had his first press conference after he left Ottawa that it was about money, and I felt that I didn't get a fair shake on my contract negotiations. I always had great admiration for Daniel Alfredsson. I loved the way that, win or lose, he was always available. He was always there to talk to you, never hid in the back room, and told you exactly what he thought. So, great player, and he deserved all the accolades he got. And the same for Saku Koivu. I had a occasion to cover a lot of Montreal games when he was in his prime with the Canadiens, and when he got sick, and the things he did off the ice to raise money for the CT PET scanner, just magnificent. Gave back a lot to the community. So those are two players who certainly will be missed. Real stand-up guys. But I feel that, you know, that's a common trait in most of the Swedish players. They're open, they're honest, they're very forthcoming, and as much as anything, and this means a lot in our business, they're accessible.
Well, Scott, you'll be doing that tonight, Vancouver, Calgary. Again, thanks as always. Very Merry Christmas to you and your family, and always appreciate when you join us.
Well, thanks for having me on, Gord. It's great to hear you informed today and not sounding like you got the crutch, which you have usually 6 months out of 12.
I know,
right?
I know. I gave it to you a few years ago. Okay, Scott, it's Christmas, for God's sakes, okay? Scott Oak joining us.
Can you
from,
get that over the phone?
I don't know. We'll find you. I don't know, Scott Oak joining us.
Now you know why I wear a mask every time we work together.
Canada. Oh, great. Now, Ron Hextall steps in, the general manager of Philadelphia Flyers. He hears about mumps and everything like that. Hey, first of all, we had, of course, your cousin Leah, our colleague, interviewed you this morning. We had Kate Smith singing Christmas carols I just heard a little while ago. So we're trying to make you at home. But besides all those great things we've set up for you, what's it like being the actual GM? I mean, you've done a lot of different things. What's it like when you're the guy?
It's good. I'm excited about the opportunity, and we haven't won as many games as we'd certainly liked or thought we'd win at this point. But we gotta get her going. We gotta get her going quick here.
You know what, Hexy, interesting enough, you know, watching, what do they call it, on Sundays that Rogers does now. Gordon, remind me of
hometown hockey.
Hometown hockey, which was
in Selkirk, Manitoba.
Was it Brandon, though, Brandon. Where Hexy was from? And they had
God's country, I might add.
God's country, the home of the goaltender, Ronnie Hextall, Kenny Reggett, Glenn Hanlon. I played with two of those other guys. And, you know, the common trait sitting with Hexy beside me right now is that I don't know if there were anger issues growing up in Brandon or anything like that, but these guys were very passionate and They like to, let's say, put
feisty.
Up the penalty minutes. Yeah, feisty. I don't know what it was. We would call Glenn Hanlon Han Looney, and Kenny Reagan would often, in morning skates, would break his stick on the crossbar before he'd go off the ice, and lo and behold, here's another Brandon guy sitting right next to us.
Oh, I'm thinking what it was with me was those dirty New York Rangers that we had to play against at the time that kind of incited everything.
Oh, yeah. Gordon, that's when we played against one another in the 80s, in case you didn't pick that up.
I know. A great, great rivalry back then. So, I mean, you've got the Flyer crest through and through. You go to L.A. and a team that has gone all the way to win the Stanley Cup. And maybe how do you meld the two traditions and the two ways of operating?
Well, I think a lot of the things that Dean took to L.A. were similar to Philly, the hard play, the physical play, and he's got an interesting way of operating. He's very analytical. So I've had the opportunity to learn from Dean Lombardi and Bob Clark and Paul Holmgren in Philadelphia. So along the way, you can learn a lot from different people in terms of styles, and then in the end, you mold your own. But I think the belief, I want to build a playoff type of team. We got a lot of really good young forwards, and our D gets a lot of criticism. They're certainly not as bad as people think they are. We got a lot of pretty good players back there, and our goaltending is good as well. But we know we need to get better. We know we're not one of the top teams right now, and that's where we're looking to get to. And it takes time. We got some again good young defensemen coming, and some really good young forwards on our team, and a couple coming as well.
Ron, this is your second year back with the organization. Last year you served as an assistant to Paul Holmgren. Slow start for the Flyers last year, a similar start to the Flyers this year, but in the last seven games, 3-1-3. So things are coming together. You've got Jakub Voracek and Claude Giroux. They're among the league leaders as far as scoring goals. So are you happy in the progression that you guys are on as of late and getting back in the Eastern Conference hunt?
Well, I think, the last few games we've been better. We actually started out west, went to San Jose, played really well, and ever since then we've played better. But we've had pockets where, we didn't have a great start. We started 0-2-2, but we didn't play that bad. We could have had a couple wins, but we didn't. And then we went on a good streak, followed by a bad streak, followed by another good streak. So the consistency is part of it, something that we got to strive to get better at. And it's hurt us thus far this year. You watch us some nights, pretty good hockey team. You watch other nights, and we don't look very good. So, again, it's something as a group we got to pull together and be more consistent.
Ron Hextall, the general manager of the Philadelphia Flyers, joining us on Hockey Nation. And last year, one of the things I remember was Ray Emery kicking the crap out of Brayton Holtby. That was part of the turnaround in the game that way, the Flyer spirit coming back. I imagine we'll see him in goal tonight because I know people aren't forthcoming with injuries, but what's the official word on Steve Mason, who just kind of mysteriously fell and was taken off the ice yesterday?
Well, he's out for the weekend. We'll find out more Monday or Tuesday. Hopefully we'll have a timeline for when Steve will be back. But as of right now, I really don't know.
And further to the injury report, Kimmo Timonen, I mean, a veteran guy on the back end who's, I think, been out the entire season. Will he be out in the entire season, or do you have any update as far as his injury status?
Kimmo, he had a blood clot, so he had to go on blood thinner 6 months. So bottom line is he's got a doctor's appointment in January, and we'll meet with the doctors and our medical staff and chemo, and we'll kind of talk things through and see where it goes. I don't have an answer. I can tell you this, he wants to play. He was a good player for us last year, and we've missed him. I think as much as we've missed a player, we've probably missed a person as well. He's a real steadying influence on our group. Older guy, kind of been there, done that, and it's been a hole for us for sure.
Right, and take a look at, when we talk about D, we think about Luke Shen, who was the face of the Maple Leafs for a couple of years, and we see Jimmy Benning now having success as a general manager in Vancouver. He was brought up as an 18-year-old here all those years ago, and it's a tough path to navigate. I'm curious, in Philadelphia, what's been the skinny on him the last couple of years?
Well, I think Luke, he takes a lot of criticism. I'm not sure it's all justified. He's been a good player for us. I mean, you guys know him. He plays a simple game. He plays hard. He's a penalty killer. If you want a skilled guy that's going to put up numbers, it's not Luke. He's one of those guys that you need to win with. And you mentioned L.A. We had Matt Green out there. and Luke is along those same lines. You still need those hard, heavy guys. And Luke works extremely hard. And, you know, the trade, obviously, if you get traded for Van Riemsdyk, who scored some goals, well, you know, what type of value do you put on a defensive defenseman? They're important guys, but they don't put up the numbers that a Van Riemsdyk does. So it's been a little bit of criticism, I think, because of that. But I expect Luke to get better and better for us. He works hard on the ice. He works hard off the ice. He's got a great attitude. He really is one of those glue guys.
Ronnie, as I look back at some of the trades that the Flyers have made, and you were in L.A. when they acquired Mike Richards, and part of that deal that Philadelphia acquired was Braden Schenn and was Wayne Simmonds. I think nobody expected Wayne Simmonds to have maybe the last few years, the seasons that he has, and again, off to a real good start with 14 goals. I mean, for me, he reminds me of a typical Flyer of the 70s or the 80s. Yeah. That, you know, it is a power forward, plays with an edge to his game, and I just love watching this kid play.
Yeah, he is, and he's, we look at it more, he's kind of the new version of the 70s and 80s Flyers. I mean, the game has changed, but power forwards are hard to find and you still need them, and he's a valuable guy for us, not only as a player but his attitude. He doesn't take losing well. He's not afraid to, you know, bring his teammates into the battle, and he's been a real valuable guy for us. I remember when we were going through that in LA making that deal, we knew we needed a centerman to kind of solidify our team, and Braden Schenn was, I think, 19 years old at the time. It was going to take 3 or 4 years and we couldn't wait. But that was a hard deal for us to make, and thank God now that it was now looking to chair him in now.
Well, it's interesting. Same thing with the Columbus deal. I mean, those are two good deals.
Yeah,
guys that went on, I mean, Voracek and that coming from Columbus.
Yep.
The other thing is, you mentioned about power forward. So watching you play all those years, I think of Mark Osborne as a power forward. Ozzie, did you score? Do you remember Ozzie ever scoring against Ron Ekstall?
I don't think he ever did.
I don't think I did, Gord. Probably one of the only goaltenders I didn't score.
Let's not check the record.
No, you know what? It reminds me, and I was doing a little bit of research on Ron, you know, winning the Conn Smythe Trophy his first year, I believe, in Philadelphia, the year after we upset the Flyers in round number one. And I thought you were going to talk about my game winner in the Spectrum in the fifth and deciding game that year for the Rangers in the third period. So I just thought I'd throw that out there for you, Gordon.
Was Marco Forrest playing?
No. It was Bobby Froese was in net. So there you go.
Okay, he would remember that one. So that's the thing. We appreciate you dropping by on the way out. Yep. You got to get Ozzie reliving his thing. And the worst part, Jim Ralph's right behind you. And he'll talk about great goaltending battles. He'll seem to his memory will be rather selective that you and him probably had some great ones. We'll try to distract him. We'll try to distract him anyway. I know it's been a busy day for you, and congratulations on the job and all the success you've had in L.A. and Philadelphia. Thanks very much for making time to join us, and have a very Merry Christmas during the break.
All right, thanks, Gord, Mark, Sam, you guys.
Ron Ekstall joining us, the general manager of the Philadelphia Flyers. Yeah, Jim Ralph's not looking if you want to slide out there, just whatever, good chance as well. And, of course, those were, as Ralphie corrals them, those were, he was a competitor. That's the, you know, the Philadelphia Flyer crest and credo. And as much as he had the success in Los Angeles, I liked him coming back to Philadelphia. I liked the Bob Clark still involved there. Paul Holmgren's still here tonight. And there's that element that they brought that, you know, is always going to be synonymous with them.
Yeah, you know, and one of the questions I did not get to is, you know, the relationship with Paul Holmgren, right? You know, for Ron, that, you know, now Paul's moved up to become the president. Just was curious as to that relationship and how that works. But
well, they're here tonight. We'll find out. It's a great Flyer core, like a lot of Flyers' history and success. We'll come back, though. Countdown of the game with Leafs Nation pregame coming up with Gord Stellick, Mark Osborne on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, and the Leafs Radio Network.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. No medical exam or health questions will be asked. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Toronto's team on Toronto Sports Radio. This is Leafs Nation pregame on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Here we are live from Air Canada Centre welcoming you to Leafs Nation pregame. Gord Stellick, Mark Osborne. on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and the Leafs Radio Network. Ozzie will hear the music blaring rather soon as the team is prepared to take the ice. It's been a little bit louder, more raucous Air Canada Center during the games because of the way Leafs play, but also it seems in the pregame warm-up as well, as the Leafs and Philadelphia Flyers about to do battle, and this is it. You want to take advantage of your last home sweet home game for a number of games, and you also want to bounce back from a indifferent, poor effort like the Leafs had in Carolina on Thursday.
Yeah, no question about that, Gord. And the Leafs that we do know is that they've been very, very good at home, certainly in the last month since that game against Nashville, the 9-2 loss. And so this building has become a very comfortable place for the Maple Leafs to play in. I think the fans have responded in a most positive way. I think we've seen expressions of appreciation on a number of occasions here that we can't say that we've actually seen that over the course of the last, you know, number of years. So that's a positive thing, and I think the Leaf players certainly know coming in when you do play at the Air Canada now that that's a boost for you as a player. And so that's I think it just speaks volume for the indication of where their home record has been at.
Well, and not to beat Salute Gate to death, but yep, we do look at the Nashville-Buffalo games back then, and it does seem that there was this 48-hour adjustment learning process, if you want to call it that, with the players towards the fans, and maybe the fans recognizing as well that they could contribute in a way, as long as the team's been playing like they have of late, be more supportive, a little bit more vocal that way. So we'll see how it carries on, and hope it does. But as we've seen every year, you care last couple of years anyway, you can't blame the fans. They are always fragile, because when you talk about the Toronto Maple Leafs, this is what happened last year. You bank some points, and the 18-wheeler goes off the road again, to use Brian Burke's term of a couple of years ago. Do you see it different this year, though, than last year in banking the points so far? Are there more of the team concepts that you can be satisfied with, where last year it seemed everyone said, you can't keep doing this?
No, I do. And, you know, it's easy to say, I mean, let's see what happens, you know, certainly over the course of the next, seven games after they play tonight. They get their next seven on the road, beginning in Chicago. Then they go into Dallas, and then it's the Christmas break. But, and certainly with the World Juniors, a lot of games you will play on the road. But the Leafs have been a very good road team this year as well. I think that's a positive thing for a team. And I've always liked to think that it's much easier to be mentally focused. I see this Leaf team and, you know, some of the areas in which we're, I think, making comparisons to last year, is that we could interchange your third and fourth line players, but yet some of the veterans that you have brought in here that have been very positive, Komarov, Daniel Winnick, Mike Santarelli, David Booth, and certainly on the back end with Stefan Robidon, Roman Polak, those aren't young players on the back end, and it's been subtle changes, and yet Jonathan Bernier, year number two as a starting goaltender, a poor start, and yet you know right now, Gord, that he is a consistent goaltender, and there's no reason why he can't go on a good run here for years to come, not only this year, but moving forward.
Well, absolutely. Thursday, if there's some positives, Bernier kept him in the game early against Carolina, where they had no business being in the game, and I thought in the third period, Ozzy, we saw that offensive flair, that panache. I mean, they've been the top-scoring team in the NHL, and they had that 7-8-minute period. They were down by one goal, and Cam Ward was playing phenomenally against them, and they did everything but tie it. Had Cody Franz not taken that unfortunate penalty, odds were a lot better. They might have.
Yeah, and you know what? It all comes down, I think, to the confidence level of this group, knowing full well that they can score. And yet, if you look at the guys that supplement the offense for the Maple Leafs, you know you're going to get offense from your number one line. You know you're going to get it from a guy like Joffrey Leupel as well. And then Nazem Kadri continues to impress along the way. But I think there's more confidence happening for the likes of a Peter Holland, a Mike Santarelli, a Daniel Winnick, and those guys feel good about themselves as well, because they feel a part of the team. So much last year, Randy had relied solely upon that top line, and everybody else as a player. You know that if you don't feel like you're really counted upon as a player on this hockey club, you will probably shrink back a little bit and not feel good about your game. Well, now you see the likes of Santarelli and Peter Holland, just to mention those two guys in particular, providing some offense for your team. That is a real positive, and I think they really found a place on this team and feel good about themselves.
Philadelphia Flyers, a classic Eastern Conference opponent as well. We chatted with Ron Hextall last half hour, their general manager. And Paul Holmgren is here, as a matter of fact, just chatting with them outside, so they got the full
entourage. Oh, he chatted to you? Because I know he chatted to me, so
yeah,
I wasn't
yeah.
sure if he said hi to you or not.
Well, yeah, he signaled that he wanted to get away from chatting with you, so I called him over. Actually, of all things, I met a guy last night when I was out with PJ Stock, and we met a guy that was the music director for the Osmond Show that's here, and his sister went out with Paul Holmgren back in Minnesota. How about that?
Wow.
So I shared that nugget
with
him.
I missed that last night
and,
with you guys.
I know, I shared that nugget with them. So there we had a quiet personal moment that way. Leafs about to hit the ice. This always has some bite to it. I'm trying to remember your days taking on the Leafs and the Flyers. I mean, we chatted about Ken Reggett earlier. He's the guy that was here, then went to Philadelphia. There were the great battles of the 1970s, the Broad Street Bullies, and first playoff series here in 99.
I know.
That's when the Leafs beat them in the playoffs.
You know what? Nothing's changed. Nothing's changed, Gord. Even though the Philadelphia Flyers come into the Air Canada Centre tonight, being amongst the lower seeds in the Eastern Conference, tied with Buffalo. I mean, that's not very good, ahead of only Carolina. And yet the firepower that we know that they do have in guys like Claude Giroux, Jakub Voracek, the guy who's playing in net tonight, Ray Emery. I mean, you know, he's a feisty guy, much like his general manager that we interviewed here. And you've got the Zach Rinaldos of the world. You got Luke Shen coming back here. So a lot of Flyer fans that you see here, that things have not changed the way that they approach the game. And the Leafs, much like Carolina, they can't take this Eastern bottom team lightly by any stretch of the imagination. I anticipate a real good, hard-checking, hard-hitting, in-your-face type of game from the Philadelphia Flyers. And again, you and I are both looking at how the Leafs will respond after that subpar performance in Carolina the other night.
Well, let's hear a little bit from Toronto Maple Leaf head coach Randy Carlyle getting set for tonight's game.
We all get mesmerized. We all get induced by winning. We're no different. We're human beings. Winning's great. And sometimes, you'll let some certain things go and you try to keep the group light. We don't want to hamper and come down hard on not playing well and winning, but the reality is we all know that you can't continue to play loose hockey and have success. And specifically, when you go out on the road, you're going to have to tone in your game. And we're going to play the last half of the season coming up here, and there's 16, I think, out of the next 22 are on the road. So that could tell where we're going to, finish and put ourselves. We want to keep ourselves in the position we're in now. We want to continue to build with our group, and we think we can do that. But it's going to take some changing on what's going on out there right now.
Play better when they fear the opponent.
I don't know. I think there's always a sense of fear when you play a game. I think you're always, as we've talked about before, you always respect the opposition. We as coaches, there's always fear. And I know that being a former player and talking to players, there's always guys that you worry about. Like tonight, we're going to worry about Claude Giroux. Simple as that. But I'm sure that the Philadelphia Flyers are going to worry about Phil Kessel. There is that element in the game at all times.
Welcome back. That was Randy Carlyle a little bit getting set for tonight's game. We'll come back and talk a little bit about the Philadelphia Flyers, give you the lineup and changes as well, and count you down to the Leafs and Philadelphia Flyers with more Leafs Nation pregame. Gord Stellick, Mark Osborne here at Air Canada Centre on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and the Leafs Radio Network.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Do not settle. Demand. Demand. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. All the skinny on tonight's Games of Shinny. This is Leafs Nation pregame with Gord Stellick and Mark Osborne on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Counting down the Toronto Maple Leafs taking on the Philadelphia Flyers as we welcome you back to Leafs Nation pregame. Gord Stellick, Mark Osborne here at Air Canada Centre on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, and the Leafs Radio Network. Injury Report is brought to you by Bergmanis Pereira, Ontario's most preferred personal injury law firm. Visit us at bplawyers.ca. Ozzie, when you first look at the Philadelphia Flyers, they actually do list Chris Pronger for contract reasons out. But Kimmo Timonen, and you chatted with Ron Hextall about that. He just said he's a guy they miss as much on the ice as off the ice as they do on the ice. Couldn't say whether he's going to be back or not or give a timeline that way. Ryan White has also missed the entire season. But the next one is the more curious one, the more compelling one for this weekend. When you look at a goaltender in the sense of
Steve Mason
collapsing yesterday at practice. Now they're saying he's going to be out for the weekend. Was he dehydrated? Did he faint? I mean, what was it? It looked like nothing was going on around him. So he's back there. It'll be Ray Emery who gets the start tonight, but certainly statistically Steve Mason has been their number one guy.
Yeah, you know, and they brought up a guy by the name of Rob Zepp, who played for the Plymouth Whalers years ago, and Pete DeBoer was the head coach there. He spent the last 6 years in Germany playing for Berlin. He's yet to even get one NHL start, and they're speculating tomorrow night because Philadelphia goes and plays Winnipeg on the road. And lo and behold, you can't play a guy like Emery back-to-back, right? Because he's going to be simply too tired.
Well, okay, Ozzy.
That way to Winnipeg.
The folks in their cars at home do not get the benefit of your sarcastic look there, because it's true about goaltenders nowadays, the reluctance to play them back-to-back. Pekka Rinne will do that with Nashville. Boston might do it with Tuukka Rask. A few of them do it that way. But what I like about the Zepp story, Rob Zepp grew up a Newmarket Saint fan. Our producer Matt Brown was saying his dad had season's tickets. He was the one. Hear that, Ralphie? That's Jimmy Ralph was playing goal back then with Alan Bester, guys like that, Jeff Reese. So anyway, local guy all these years, so could be on the verge of getting his first ever NHL action. Toronto Maple Leafs, when we took the injury front, Leo Komarov on the ice this morning, so that was encouraging. Roman Polak back the other night. So really their injuries are not all that significant beyond Komarov. What is interesting, who will be the scratch tonight? It was Corbinian Holzer the other night. It seems like it'll be Jake Gardner tonight.
Well, it really does, Gordon. They're just getting ready to do the line rushes right now. So the Bozak line is going with Phaneuf and Franzen. So obviously, you know, that's the defensive pair. But from all indications this morning, Jake Gardner will, in fact, be the healthy scratch. Robidoux going in line number two with Roman Polak. And so stay tuned right now. Here comes Morgan Riley with Corbinian Holzer. So Jake Gardner looks like he, in fact, is the odd man out.
Well, you agree with that or not?
I do agree with it. You know what? Jake's got to be better. You can't have the type of mental lapses that, you know, he has had on more of a consistent basis in some regards. I think we expect more from Jake Gardner. He's been around the block a long period of time now. He's making a significant dollar, and for the way that Leafs have to improve defensively as a core group, I think putting a guy back in like Corbinian Holzer, who has proved over the course of the Roman Polak injury that he deserves to play. He's been very solid defensively.
Well, the trials and tribulations of a young D making the team, and I always compare a lot of guys, say, to Todd Gill, who had a lot of years where, you know, he was in limbo up and down, hot and cold, and then back when you guys, when things turned around and some veteran D were added, stabilized his position with the Toronto Maple Leafs. Look on the other side, Luke Schenn. I mean, Luke Schenn for James Van Riemsdyk. Luke Shen's a guy that has been a healthy scratch about seven occasions for the Philadelphia Flyers. I mean, it is an imperfect science about young defensemen who appear to have crossed certain hurdles, but then other ones either can't or take a step or two back.
Yeah, you know, an interesting one as far as Luke Schenn goes, because, Gord, I mean, watching him during his tenure here as a Toronto Maple Leaf, I mean, one of the things that we would agree upon, he's a good person, he's a character kid, supposed to be a stay-at-home defenseman, and yet the way that the game continues to move forward as far as just being a skating game, that's one of the things that Luke Schenn is his Achilles heel, and I don't know how he improves his skating by any stretch of the imagination, but, you know, he is a competitor, and yet I think having Kimmo Tiimonen out of the lineup, who he has been paired up with during his time in Philadelphia, has certainly hurt Luke Schenn's game this season, to say.
Well, minus 11 right now. He's got the highest or the worst plus minus on the Philadelphia Flyers. Also, a guy like Vinny LeCavalier, been a healthy scratch about 14 times. And there again, you talk about taking on an onerous contract. It sounded good. It was.
You think it sounded good? I was like shocked.
No, I was shocked by the numbers. I think it sounded good in Philadelphia about that name, the name LeCavalier. But it would sound better if it was 10 years ago. And that's a bit of an albatross that way. We talked about all the good pickups in Simmons and Voracek. This is where you have to be careful about falling in love with a guy's reputation.
Well, absolutely, Gordon. You know, last year at the start of the year, you know, Vinny got off to a pretty good start, and I think was a real positive. But we've seen again that You know, he tried to improve his skating the last couple of summers, and yet he's at the point where he's not that old, and yet it seems that his skating, and for whatever reason, the years of service, that maybe the mighty dollar is no longer a motivating factor for a guy like that. Be interested to see who, in fact, Vinny LeCavalier does play with here. He's slated right now on the fourth line with Zach Rinaldo. I mean, a skilled guy like that, what are you supposed to do with limited minutes? It certainly is an interesting scenario for Vinny LeCavalier.
Well, you know, last year we talked about that game against Washington where the Flyers were getting, beat about 6-0, and that was when they took it back in the gutter, in the alley, and that's when Ray Emery basically beat up Brayden Holtby, the goaltender of the Washington Capitals. But Vinny LeCavalier also had a fight there. Vinny showed up, and that, even though they lost, seemed to be the galvanizing turnaround point for the Philadelphia Flyers to get back on track. We'll come back. We'll talk about a Philadelphia Flyer team that's looking to get back on track and the Toronto Maple Leaf team, which is looking to erase a one-game blip as they have their final home game before Christmas, their final home game before a number of games on the road. We'll come back with more Leafs Nation pregame. Gord Stelic, Mark Osborne on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and the Leafs Radio Network.
Send us all your money. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher, and we'll send you a free subscription for Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Absolutely free.
Welcome you back to Leafs Nation pregame. Gord Stelic, Mark Osborne here at Air Canada Center, getting set for the Toronto Maple Leafs to take on the Philadelphia Flyers. Of course, all the action right here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and the Leafs Radio Network. So you're pointing to the analytics there, something Damian said?
Oh, no, you know what? He was just pointing out that the Leafs in their last, 11 hockey games, puck possession, even though the record is very good, is 29th in the National Hockey League. Save percentage is very good. And so at the end of the day, what they're saying is they can't sustain this for a long period of time, right? It's going to come back and bite you.
Yeah,
I don't know if you agree with that or not, but it's, again, one of those things to consider when you go through and you analyze all the different information that's happening. And interesting enough also, Gord, is that they're starting to talk about putting a chip in, you know, guys' equipment or something just to, you know, again, come up with more and more information for where guys are on the ice and all this kind of stuff, which is... Again, information and interesting stuff, right?
Well, one they were pointing out was Leafs in their 12-game, 10-1-1 stretch, 29th in the NHL in puck possession, but they had a shooting percentage, scoring percentage over 14%. Last year, they were 29th in the league, but their scoring percentage was about half at 7%. So just saying, okay, puck possession is the same. The other part is the Leafs do move the puck quickly. When they're playing well, they move the puck pretty quick. But interesting stats. One stat that just came up as well in looking at the pregame notes, Dion Phaneuf has been on the ice for 55 of the Maple Leafs' 110 goals. Four, not against. So that's 50% of the Leafs' goals, and that's the most, the percentage-wise, of any player in the NHL. Quietly, the captain has had the kind of steady play that Philadelphia would love to get out of Luke Shen, for example.
No, it really has. And I think one thing that we can do, because both you and I know of our outspoken criticism of Dion Phaneuf over the course of time, and yet he has settled in as far as his play, making the adjustment from being a right defense over to the left D, which was an adjustment. And then Cody Franson, could they be the shutdown pair? But you know, for the most part, I think Dion Phaneuf has settled in as far as providing real consistent play, and that's been a real positive for the Maple Leafs of late.
Okay, everyone's waiting. This is it, the cherry on the sundae. We leave the best for last. It's Mark Osborne, Keys to Victory. Keys to Victory are brought to you by the Toronto Area Ford dealers. Get the deal you want on the vehicle with the features you want during Ford's year-end pricing event. On now.
Well, you know what, Gord, first and foremost for me is we're going to move past the game against Carolina the other night, but for me, what I think the Leafs really need to get back to doing is to push the pace. I mean, they're a very good skating team, and we've seen over the course of time, even when they were winning, that they weren't really moving their feet. And I'm going to say, get back to your skating game as a collective group and take advantage of the Flyers' D. That's their Achilles heels. They're not very good, so make them play in their own end of the ice, but you'll do that by pushing the pace and moving your feet. Point number two,
specialty teams. This is going to be a huge key for the game tonight. The Flyers' power play, by the way, is ranked fifth in the National Hockey League. You know, Claude Giroux and Jakub Voracek, probably two of the best on the half wall. They're at 24% on the power play, so it's going to be incumbent upon the Leaf penalty killers. And then down on the other end of things, the Flyers penalty killers, they're 29th in the National Hockey League, 75%. So again, win the specialty team game, good chance you're going to win the hockey game. And then point number three is I'm going to say this. Take care of the Flyer dynamic duo, Rocky and Bullwinkle. Okay,
who's Claude Rocky?
That's Claude Giroux.
Okay.
Bullwinkle is Jakub Voracek. You know, an interesting fact, as you know, Gordon, and I don't have to tell you this when it comes to statistics, but Claude Giroux leads the National Hockey League with 27 assists. Jakub Voracek is only now a point behind Tyler Seguin for the NHL lead in points. He's got 38 points on the season, ties for second with Evgeny Malkin. So those two guys are in a majority of their offense, and they play together on the same line. So take care of those boys. There's another good chance you're going to win the hockey game.
Well, you know, it's funny. You look at, and we chatted with Ron Hextall earlier, and, okay, L.A. Kings adding Mike Richards and Jeff Carter, particularly a couple of years ago. Richards more so the first cup than the second, but they win two Stanley Cups with those guys. Jeff Carter gets there via Columbus, but look who Philadelphia got. Jakub Voracek, Wayne Simmonds, Braden Schenn, all in those trades. I mean, that was a great trade for the Philadelphia Flyers. In so many ways, as I watch Ilya Bryzgalov, had a terrible night last night, his first start for the Anaheim Ducks, and it goes back to since Ron Hextall's days, goaltending for the Philadelphia Flyers has seemingly been their Achilles heel for so many years.
No, it really has, Gord, and not to mention also the savings on the amount of money those two guys were making in particular as well, because that was a consideration in moving both of them with, what do they have, like 9-year contracts, 10-year
contracts? Before the no trade had kicked in as well. So, yeah, absolutely. You saved a lot of money that way and added some. But still, goaltending's been a problem.
Yeah, goaltending has been an issue for these guys going all the way back to, you know, who knows? I mean, the last real, you know, positive goaltender they had was probably the GM that was sitting right beside us in Ron Hextall going back to the late 80s. But again, as we analyze and look at the Philadelphia Flyers, one other point I wanted to make, Gordon, in addition to signing Vinny LeCavalier last year to that, you know, significant amount of money, was a trade that they made this summer, trading Scotty Hartnell for R.J. Umberger. And I know Umberger was a Philadelphia Flyer at one point. I don't know if that was a financial consideration, and yet the Flyers could certainly use a guy like Scotty Hartnell, which is, a meat and potato type of guy.
Absolutely.
And certainly typified what it means to be a Philadelphia Flyer.
Well, we'll find out what a Philadelphia Flyer is tonight. The Toronto Maple Leafs want to get back. Toronto hasn't done well against teams under 500. That's what the Flyers are, one of those tonight in taking on the Maple Leafs here at Air Canada Center. We'll, of course, come back at the first intermission. Ozzy and myself give you the out-of-town scores. This is an active night going around the NHL. And, of course, after the game, we'll be back with Leafs Nation postgame as well to discuss and see if the Toronto Maple Leafs can get back on track. But we're going to turn it over, play-by-play and the call with Joe Bowen and Jim Ralph. Stay tuned for the Leafs and the Flyers. You've been listening to Leafs Nation pregame. Gord Stellick, Mark Osborne on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and the Leafs Radio Network.